With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Gators Breakdown. Because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Joining me for this episode, Nick Delatorre from Gators Territory. Nick, I was going to have you on this week anyway. It was Will Miles was going to be on, but lo and behold, he had a baby last week. So big congrats there to Will and the birth of his baby boy last week. But I think you and I can handle it. It's a lot to handle, but I stated the program style of episode. But one more congrats to Will out there.
How selfish of Will, putting his family and baby ahead of Gator fans that want to hear his takes. Congratulations, yeah, Will.
Yeah, for one, state of the program. Yeah, pretty big. You know, I thought it was important after the 2020 season, and I think you can kind of hit this topic after signing day because everything kind of comes together. Everybody, you want to go out there and check out the National Signing Day episode Will and I hit last week. Go to Gators Territory as well. A lot of National Signing Day coverage, even though a lot didn't happen last week for the game.
Yeah, I was going to say, we could have done that last. We could have done the breakdown last month.
Exactly. Besides transfers.
It was so crazy because, like, Cassidy Hill texted me on signing day. And she's like, are we not doing a press conference? And I was like, nope, I guess not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just as good as I did, we probably would have heard Tuesday at the latest if we were going to have one. And I know a couple of fans asked me if there was going to be one. I was like, I don't think so. I said, Florida didn't let us know Monday, didn't let us know Tuesday. And, you know, besides some transfers and some coaching hires, you know, I think we probably could discuss with Dan Mullen those two topics. But, you know, the base of a signing day, which is high school recruits, you know, all that was taken care of in December. So I guess Florida was like, okay, vacation time.
Listen, if I had a $6 million salary, I would like to go on vacation as much as Dan Mullen. So go ahead, man. Use that money. Use those booster jets and tell me how Tahiti is. I just don't think Nick Saban's staff is on vacation right now.
Probably so. Shout out to Nelly. Nelly just sent me a text saying he's checking in here for this episode. Thanks a lot, Nelly, for checking out. Thanks to all you checking us out as well on this State of the Program episode here of Gators Breakdown. Before we get started, remember you can find Gators Breakdown at news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. You'll find all the Gators Breakdown episodes as well as News4Jax coverage of the Gators. Please share, rate, and review the show on YouTube. Hit that like button. Hit that subscribe button. It really helps us out here on YouTube. Live, of course, you'll notice the Super Chat feature for a donation. It'll highlight your comment for everyone in the chat to see, and I'll try and post it on the stream as well, as long as it's supportive or pertinent to the topic. If you just want the audio version of Gators Breakdown, check us out on your favorite podcast platform. Follow Gators Breakdown on social media. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Gators Breakdown. So, Nick, man, I think the best way to start this is just let's look at see what Dan Mullen has done so far in his tenure at Florida. Record by the season here, 2018, 10-3, 11-2 in 2019, 8-4 in 2020 with the shortened season there. I posted this, Nick, a couple weeks ago. Records of SEC teams since Mullen became head coach at Florida in 2018. He's made Florida football fun again. This kind of backs it up here too. Alabama, of course, first in the SEC, 38-3 record since 2018, since Dan Mullen has taken over. That's good for 92.7% winning percentage there for Alabama. Georgia, 31-7. as I mentioned, Alabama was at 92%, basically 93% winning percentage. Georgia all the way down to 81.6, but that's good for second in the SEC. LSU 30-8 since 2018, 79%. And then Florida 29-9, 76.3% winning percentage. And then Nick, a little surprise here, Kentucky right behind Florida. 23-14 with a 62.2% winning percentage since 2018. That's tied with Auburn with the same record, 23-14, 62.2% winning percentage. So, Nick, Florida's record versus those teams there, that's the best of the SEC when you look at it. Alabama,
Kentucky.
Georgia. Yeah.
Alabama. Kentucky's the best of the SEC.
They are.
Are they a football school now? Because I don't think the basketball team's doing that well.
Man, tied for fifth since 2018 in wins there. Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Florida, Kentucky, and Auburn tied for fifth. Florida's record versus those team, Nick, 5-6 with two wins coming versus. Yeah, two of those wins versus Kentucky. One over LSU in 2018, one over Auburn in 2019, and the win over Georgia in 2020. So 0-1 versus Bama, 1-2 versus Georgia, 1-2 versus LSU, 2-1 versus Kentucky, 1-0 versus Auburn. That's the SEC's best there. That's how he stacks up, Nick, versus the SEC's best since he's been hired.
Well, quick sidebar, what sticks out to me about LSU, they were 16-0 in their national championship year, weren't they? Or 15-0?
It would be 12-0, 13-0, 14-15.
Yep. So that's a 15-8 record other than, you know, one magical season. That's not good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's they had the high of the high in 2019 and the low of the low in 2020. They did turn it around. You know, they beat Florida and Ole Miss there the last 2 weeks of the season. Did LSU, but Nick, here's what it is. I mean, here's what it is. Alabama 38-3. So that was, like I said, basically 93%. And then look at this: Georgia, LSU, and Florida pretty much grouped together. Georgia 81.6, LSU 79%. Florida 76. Not much separate Georgia, LSU, and Florida since Dan Mullen's taken over.
No.
Overall record wise, of course. You know, LSU with a national championship. Georgia with college football playoff. Well, they didn't make the playoff in 2018, but they played in the SEC championship game twice in 2018, 2019. There. So, you know, that's pretty much, you know, where they are a little better than Florida, Georgia, and LSU. But as I said, you know, looking at it, those three teams right there are grouped together, Georgia, LSU, and Florida.
Yeah, I thought I really felt like the Georgia game was a big step. And I literally said it before the game. A lot of people didn't like the tweet, but I said, this is a career statement game for Dan Mullen. Is he Gainesville Mark Richt, where you're going to be good and you're going to win 10 games every year, but you're going to lose to your rival and you're going to lose to Georgia? Or can you get over this hump and can you become elite? And then I think what we saw, and maybe you agree, maybe you don't, Florida will deny it, the players, the coaches, up and down. That Georgia game was their Super Bowl. They did not look like that team that beat Georgia the rest of the season. Maybe against Alabama, because that game, the SEC championship game, was actually close. I mean, a couple plays either way. If Trey Dean doesn't fumble that, maybe Florida goes down and score. If Dan doesn't call a timeout before going for two and has a play ready, maybe you have more time for a game-winning drive there. But other than that, against Tennessee, against Kentucky, against Vanderbilt, Florida didn't look good. So I really think that you pushed all in versus Georgia, and then we're just happy after that. Because that, to me, if the team that beat Georgia shows up the rest of the way, Florida looks impressive in those next three wins. And then probably gives – well, I mean, they already did give Alabama their best game of the year in 2020. But maybe we're talking about a whole different end of the season, because the end of the season leaves a really bad taste in your mouth, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we'll get into that, because that's a big part of state of the program, Nick, is how Florida fell in 2020. But since 2018, Nick, I'll extend that thought. Florida's eighth among FBS teams in total wins since Dan Mullen has been hired. That's behind Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Georgia, LSU. Huh, that sounds very familiar to recruiting rankings, if you ask me. But we'll get into
stars don't matter, because there weren't a bunch of five stars in the Super Bowl, Dave.
look, when it comes down to it, you ask pretty much any Gator fan out there when Dale Mullen was hired, if they would take everything that I just laid out, they would probably take it. Now, you know, the 1-2 records versus Georgia and LSU aren't anything to write home about. That, you know, that can stick with you. But overall, I think if you look at the overall picture and going to your point right here, except the late season slide of 2020, you know, Mullen, he's put the Gators on track somewhat in the conversation. And, you know, I think part of this, Nick, and one thing I wanted to look at, and the ESPN brought this up, and they broke down tiers of college football, and they broke down all 130 teams. We're not going to break down all 130, but just for the sake of the conversation here, tier one, and that's what they call championship favorites. No surprise. Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Ohio State, Oklahoma. Those teams have dominated the college football playoff appearances. They've been in conference championship games the last few years. That's just, you know, and they do really good recruiting as well. So, of course, teams are really going to, or pundits and media are really going to jump on those teams as putting them in tier one. And, of course, you know, all those teams, Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, not so much Georgia, but Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, many, many college football playoff appearances and ending the season in top 10 fashion. Tier two, knocking on the door, and this is what, you know, is going to – then this is for the tiers going into the 2021 season, not an overall, you know, college football, but going into 2021. They have Florida in that tier two, but they have Florida grouped with North Carolina, Notre Dame, Oregon, Penn State, Texas, Texas A&M. No LSU on tier two. I had to go look at that. I think they had tier – I think just because of, you know, they're going towards 2021 and the way LSU played in 2020 – had LSU all the way down at tier four, which was kind of surprising to me, but I digress. You know, looking at Florida here. So, Nick, going into it, as I said, go back to 2018. I think most Gator fans are happy with what Dan Mullen has been able to bring to the table. Hard to forgive that late season 2020 slide, but ESPN here, you know, for 2021 has Florida still in that tier two knocking on the door.
I think it's Not to say that we're being prisoners of the moment, because obviously the end of the season, and then listen, Florida was completely checked out, did not want to be in the Cotton Bowl at all. Didn't look like they had a plan to win the game. It was just like, hey, let's just run out there, collect the Cotton Bowl paycheck, and let's get out of here.
Nick, you're going to write what you're going to write.
Dan was tired of me by the end of the year. I'm glad we don't have a couple of press conferences and forget me for a little bit. But I did, after that game, I stayed up way too late, and I went back and I looked at Dan's record for top 20 against top 25 teams. First off, he's 0-10 versus Saban.
Yep. That was going to be one of the next topics. So go right ahead. That had to transition well.
He's 12-39 versus top 25 teams, 8-20 versus top 10. Now it's not fair. He took over a Mississippi State team that was bad, and he had to play a ranked LSU. Arkansas was ranked when he first got there. He had to play Alabama a bunch. So then I broke it down to, well, when his team was also ranked in the top 25, 6-13. And then, of course, you mentioned 5-6 versus AP top 25 ranked teams. So I think part of it is, like you said, I think the program is going in the right direction. Obviously, three straight New Year's Six Bowls. Now you have an expectation. And I think what happens is not just the end of the season being a disappointment, but then you get into recruiting and you see, well, we're not competing with Alabama recruiting. How are we going to compete with Alabama on the field? We're not competing with Georgia recruiting. A lot of the recruiting rankings, or none of the recruiting rankings, are including getting an Eric Gilbert, getting a DeMarcus Bowman. These are five-star guys. Eric Gilbert was the fifth-rated player overall just a year ago, but he's not going to include into this. Portal Combat, Dan Mullen and his staff, they get fatality all the time. They're great in the portal. I think the frustration is seeing – okay, sure, Florida finishes 12th, but you're fifth in the SEC. So, and you shouldn't be, I think at Florida, listen, you don't need to be a top three team every single year, but the success you're having on the football field should be showing more in recruiting battles. And I think that's part of the frustration as well, because football season is only 3-4 months of the year. Recruiting is 24/7. And I think the frustration is the perception, whether it's true or not, and I have my own opinions, that the staff is lazy when it comes to recruiting, and they're fine taking projects or getting kids in the portal. And listen, it's working out. You got Van Jefferson, Trayvon Grimes, Jonathan Gernard, like you're hitting in the portal, But I think fans want to see more five-star, high four-star high school kids committed to Florida, not guys that are coming, you know, as a one-year Band-Aid.
Yeah, that, going there, record versus ranked teams, you kind of hit it there. Teams that finish in the AP poll at the end of the season, 4-7 versus top 25, 2-6 versus top 10. And going back to your time, you know, Mississippi State, for Florida fans and other fans, that's for you to judge however you want to judge for, you know, his time at Mississippi State, what he did, and with an undermanned squad week in and week out going against some of the nation's best teams. The thought was once he got a roster he could compete with, that he'd do much better. It is better. And while building the program in its early stages. And, you know, I don't really think that stat's all that terrible, but I would like to see it be a bit better. And, you know, let's take a look how it broke out. 2018, one of those top 10 wins happened. LSU finished one spot ahead of Florida in 2018 at number 6. Florida lost to number 7, Georgia, and number 12, Kentucky, beat number 14, Michigan. In 2019, lost to number 1, LSU, lost to number 4, Georgia, beat number 14, Auburn. Nothing to really be ashamed about there in 2019. Lost to number 1, lost to number 4, beat number 14. Didn't really play a whole lot of ranked teams in 2019. Then comes 2020, where Florida lost to number 1, Alabama, number 4, Texas A&M, number 6, Oklahoma, beat number 7, Georgia. Georgia was the only ranked team Florida beat in 2020. So, Nick, I think this goes to the kind of question, too. What's the best win in Dan Mullen's tenure since he's been at Florida?
Georgia.
There's different ways to weigh it. Revisionist history may tell us, okay, 2018 win versus LSU. They weren't the 2019 Tigers, but they only lost to Alabama the rest of the way in 2018, ended up being a pretty good team that year. In 2019, Auburn was the only ranked team and ranked win that season, best win of that season. Doesn't really register as best win, though. Best atmosphere, probably, since Dan Mullen's been hired, goes to that 2019 Auburn game, but not the best win. And then this past season, the big must-needed win over Georgia. It had to happen in 2020, yeah, and did it in blowout fashion. And look, I still think Florida wins that game, even if JT Daniels in plays and a full-strength Georgia defense. As long as Florida, as going to your point, Nick, was in that same groove that they were in that night, I think Florida still wins that game. Would have been a closer game. Probably looks like the Florida-Alabama SEC championship game with Florida coming out on top in that versus Georgia in that fashion. But final rankings say 2018 number 6 LSU was the best win over the 2020 number 7 Georgia Bulldogs. But it being Georgia, going to your point, Mullen absolutely needing it. I go beating Georgia as the best win. But I say that 2018 LSU was the better team if you look at that team probably throughout a whole season. And I'd probably pick the end of season 2018 LSU versus end of season 2020 Georgia Bulldogs.
That was the jumping off point for Joe Burrow and that LSU team. Lost to Florida and then tore it up after that. The Michigan Peach Bowl probably felt good, not as important as like Georgia, but probably felt good given – the last two times you had played Michigan in recent history didn't go well, and then that was just a beating.
I don't put a lot of stock in bowl games, but early in coaches' tenures, I think it can really help, and that game absolutely did help.
Yeah, I was just thinking just from a fan standpoint, like two times Florida played Michigan, it's like, please, not enough. First off, it was like, why Florida's played Michigan more times than they've played Auburn, who used to be a yearly rival? And I was like, why do I know – Michigan beat writers by name. I've just, you know, seen them so much. For me, it would definitely be that Georgia game. And it was just because, to me, it was, you know, like Will Muschamp lost to Georgia, lost to Georgia, lost to Georgia. This is – Dan Mullen comes from the Urban Meyer tree. You don't lose to your rivals. Like, okay, shoot, we got tripped up and we lost to Ole Miss. But guess what? We're not losing to LSU. We're not losing to Florida State. And we're not losing to Georgia. Those are teams you have to beat and you have to beat consistently. To be as successful as you need to be as a coach at Florida.
Nick, so I think, you know, given that little history there of kind of where we're at this point for Florida and going back to that tier that ESPN put Florida at, I think the big question along a lot of fans' mind, a lot of people's minds, does Florida stay in that tier or do they make a jump? When do they make that jump? Does the late season 2020 slide change expectations much? 2021 is a big season of change. a tough schedule, a big shift in offensive philosophy, coaching changes, and trying to fix an historically bad defense, all while playing Alabama, Georgia, and LSU. And of course, we've discussed at great length here, you know, recruiting, you know, is it good enough? Transfers or not? We're still asking ourselves that question.
Yeah. And I was just doing one of the national guys doing a bigger piece on players and who's leaving, which guys are staying. You mentioned the three coaches leaving. That's probably the most turnover. That is the most turnover Dan Mullen's ever had on his coaching staff. Since he's been a head coach at Mississippi State or at Florida, three coaches in a season. You've got 15 seniors, including Trask and Tony. My boy Jacob Finn, punter people too. He's also leaving. But I'm getting big LSU after 2019 vibes, minus the national championship. So if we're talking state of the program, I'm looking a lot of turnover. I think the offense is going to be completely different. You're losing a ton of guys. And like the seniors that you're getting back, are any of these exciting to you? Jeremiah Moon, Stuart Reese, Rick Wells, Gene DeLance. Like it's a big, I'm not going to say rebuilding here, but there's a lot of question marks for Florida and for Dan. And I'm hoping we can go actually watch them practice in the spring. Because I just need to see it. There's just so many question marks. Quarterback, how does the running back room shake out? That's so deep. I think we're going to look at a completely different team. And if Eric Gilbert transferred to Florida thinking that he was going to catch many passes as Kyle Pitts, I don't think Florida's going to be throwing the ball like that next year.
No, absolutely not. You know, definitely something that was brought up with this offense.
And he's going to come to Florida and be like, what the heck happened? This is not what I watched.
Nick, I think part of this, and I think we're, you know, I don't want to speak for all the fans out there, and this is kind of coming from my point of view. Mm-hmm. Should there be this many questions after year three? And I think a lot of it comes after that late slide of 2020 and the losing the inexcusable game to LSU. Bama, you mentioned it. I mean, you gave your best, all that. But then the Cotton Bowl, no matter the circumstances, still rub people the wrong way in some form or fashion. Maybe not the game itself, but maybe the way you attack the game. And
waving a white flag before kickoff?
Right. And then, of course, all the off-field NFL and all that stuff, talk and coaching changes and now, you know, recruiting. And I think that's kind of where I'll go next and take a, you know, a historical look at recruiting. We go to that part of it, Nick. But I mean, I think that's where a lot of the question comes from is we've played three seasons under Dan Mullen. 2020 was supposed to be somewhat the year. A late season this slide.
To me, this was the year with what you had coming back, the amount of seniors you had. I think really our only questions were at wide receiver, but then Kyle Pitts has the season he does. Tony has the season. The schedule laid out. It would have been easier before the 10-game schedule, but then I guess A&M probably was a tougher game, you know, if you see their season. But the schedule laid out really well for Florida. You had to beat Georgia, and that was pretty much it. And they took care of that. So I think the frustrating part was – it wasn't even a drama-free year. It was just, there's never a dull moment, but it was just something every week, and it was either a loss or Dan Mullen doing something that caused negative attention. And then the whole NFL thing, like, listen, I'm also very interested in Jennifer Aniston. I don't think she's interested in me. I think Dan Mullen lost a bunch of leverage. He's had a six-year contract. He finished 3 years. You want your head coach to have 4 years on their deal so they don't get negatively recruited against. What did Dan Mullen do all year long? He punted any kind of leverage he had in contract negotiations out the door. So Jimmy Sexton sends Adam Schefter a little text, says, hey, NFL might want Dan Mullen. He says it on TV, and now it's a thing, and you and I have to sit here and talk about it. I don't think the NFL was interested in Dan Mullen. I think Dan Mullen wanted to get some leverage back, and that was something – we were chasing a ghost, Dave. I don't think that was ever going to happen.
Yeah, I think that interest is there. But like you said, it's
one-sided, it's like me and Jennifer Aniston. Right. One-sided interest.
Very hard to tell where it's coming at in the NFL. So, yeah, A lot of questions in year three, Nick. Big part of it still, the late season 2020 slide, and then, of course, recruiting. I think that's kind of why you have to wait on these kind of maybe state of the programs, maybe the week after signing day like we did here. Tease that we were doing this last week, but, of course, I think you have to kind of wait till after signing day as well when you want to look at it. And, look, Mullen should get lauded for, and you mentioned it, the way he's used the portal and the way he's used it to get some good players. But once again, you know, the argument is why can't both paths be great? You know, traditional recruiting doesn't have to suffer or need to suffer because of the transfer portal. And look, we can tout top 10 classes Mullen has brought in, but how many of those players ever played a down for Florida? You know, if we're going to praise the players coming in as transfers for Florida, I think at the same time, we have to be alarmed by the number of players that have left Florida without ever even playing a snap for the Gators. 2018 transition class ended up ranked 14th, headlined by Jacob Copeland, Richard Garage, Emory Jones as the highest ranked players in the class. Also featured Kyle Pitts, by the way. But Justin Watkins was the fourth highest recruit in that class, never played a down for the Gators. Lucas Kroll featured for only two seasons, but that was expected as a JUCO guy. Florida tight end production behind Pence wasn't really going to be any better with or without Kroll in 2020. He knew that. He transferred away. But Malik Langham, out. John Huggins, out. Randy Russell, medical condition, couldn't play. Transfers that year, Van Jefferson, Trevon Grimes, Adam Schuler, all big-time contributors at their, in their time at Florida. But, you know, you see the additions and subtractions as to why you just can't add and not take away with some of these better players in the class not ever playing. 2019, the bump class, the class that's historically coaches make that jump. The class finished ninth, fifth in the SEC. Chris Steele, top-rated player in the class, never played a down for the Gators. Same for Jalen Jones, Deontay Marks, never contributed. DeJuan Black, yet to make it to campus, but he should in May. Deyave Hammond, Wardrick Wilson, two offensive linemen that never played a snap for the Gators. So that's a top 10 class, but when you look deeper, it really isn't. You brought in Jonathan Gennard. Yeah. I do what?
So you just lost half of it. You named a top 10 class and you dropped 12 kids.
You mean you brought in Jonathan Gennard, but you got one season out of him. You know, Steele, Jones, Black, Hammond, Wilson were all four stars and never played a down out of that class. That hurts. You know, and I look at one position that we keep keying on for these Gators is offensive line. I just named guys there that were four stars, never played a snap for the Gators among the offensive line. And then you replaced them, you know, and you haven't really replaced offensive linemen through the portal except for Stuart Reese. 2020 class, headlined Gervin Dexter, Derek Wingo, Xavier Henderson, also featured another four-star offensive lineman, Isaiah Walker, who never played a snap for the Gators. So, you know, that was a big, you know, that was a big hit, but overall, not as bad as the year before with just numbers of guys that never played a snap. But with an exit of players without ever playing a snap, not as bad as the year before. But last year also featured transfers, five-star Brenton Cox, five-star Lorenzo Lingard, five-star Justin Shorter, four-star Stuart Reese. Still think we're waiting on those guys to play up to their potential, Nick. And then the 2021 class from last week, if you add in five-star transfers, Eric Gilbert, DeMarcus Bowman, defensive tackles Naquan Newkirk, Antonio Shelton, give the Gators a class that would finish just inside the top 10. But as I said, it's weird when you add transfers into class rankings as a big majority of those guys are 3 to 5 year players, not just 1 to 3 year players that you're getting in the portal. Most will only be 1 to 2 year players in looking at that. So, Nick, taking a look there, the portal is a necessity for Florida since they have struggled to pull in top talent from high school, get some signees on the field. They have to fill these holes through the portal. And those players look to be the part as far as raising the talent level for Dan Mullen's team. The portal's here to stay. Mullen is taking advantage, but we just don't know how it's going to work long term. Still a lot of Jim McElwain players that were big contributors just as recent as this past season for the Gators. So I think we can also ask ourselves, Nick, the recruits that have signed, are they not developing fast enough? You know, we discussed the trenches a lot. Florida's having to bring in two defensive tackle transfers because, you know, besides Gervin Dexter, they haven't recruited well enough numbers wise or developed anyone there at that position. Many of the players that haven't even played a snap for Florida are offensive linemen, but Florida has only brought in Stuart Reese through the portal. So you like to have those offensive linemen you originally recruited signed being developed. Look, the portal, it's a strategy that may pay off with the way traditional recruiting is lacking. Hitting the portal is a must. And in doing it, it's been really good for Dan Mullen. But I do think it's fair to ask, should it have to be done? Early in this tenure, you're trying to transition the roster from Jim McElwain's recruiting. I think it was a necessity. Early on, the portal had to be hit. It was hit well. But as we get further from those Jim McElwain years, should it have to be reliability? You don't turn down talent like Bowman and Gilbert. Absolutely not. You get those guys however you can get them. But besides talent like that, I'd like to see it be built and developed from scratch, because it still seems like that's the path to consistency.
It seems like the portal should be used as, you know, picking your spots, a Gilbert, a Bowman, instead of, well, we didn't get that kid, so I guess we'll just wait to see who is, you know, entering the portal after the season. It almost seems like there's as much emphasis on the portal when you should just be kind of cherry picking from the portal and really pouring your attention and your resources into recruiting high school players that will be with you for 3-4 years instead of the guys, you know, I call them a Band-Aid. You know, I would love a John Grenard Band-Aid every single year. Give me, you know, 11 sacks a year as a Band-Aid, sure. But I think maybe that's it. And I think that's probably where it's not – listen, the portal's not easy either. You have a bunch of guys going to get, you know, recruiting these guys over again. I just think maybe people see it as lazy from the staff. Oh, well, they're getting beat out by Nick Saban for this guy, and then they're just, you know, taking whoever was unhappy at LSU or whoever was unhappy at, you know, Oklahoma or from somewhere else. I just think that this coaching staff has to do something to change that perspective that they are lazy recruiters.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, you're not going to turn down the five-star talent, you know, however you do get them. But I mean, I think there's still a lot of questions on if that's going to work. And we know the way that does work. But it does seem like this staff at least realizes they can't recruit that well on the high school front, and they are at least trying the other way to at least keep the roster talent up.
I wonder if it's almost being, I'm the smartest guy in the room, and hey, I don't need to get that five star. You look at John Hevesy, and it's just like 3-star lineman, and then he's a great, I think, on field coach and a great technical teacher of offensive linemen. And it's like, all right, I'll show you. You thought this kid wasn't going to be anything? Well, it might take 4 years. And he's a redshirt junior before he's starting, but hey, you're a good player. But I think when you're at Florida, when you're at Mississippi State, it's two completely different recruiting philosophies. There's kids that you could have a undefeated season at Mississippi State, and you bring a kid from Miami up to Starkville, and you're like, hey, look, we're going to use you this, this, and this. And they go, I'm not living in Starkville, Mississippi. Are you crazy? So they had to take kids. Nothing against DeJuan Black. I'm really excited for him to get on campus, but they took a chance, not even took a chance. They knew DeJuan Black wasn't going to qualify out of high school. Take his commitment, which takes a spot. You know he's not going to be there, but that takes a spot that somebody else could have had. You continue a relationship, keep the relationship through 2 years at JUCO, and now you're hoping, hey, we're going to have a good player for a year, maybe 2 years. That's stuff that you have to do at Mississippi State. You have to be creative. At the University of Florida, you need to walk into somebody's living room and know that that logo on your chest carries weight. You don't have to get creative. You tell the number one quarterback in the country, hey, Dan Mullen, here's my quarterback coach. Wish it was still Brian Johnson. This is what we're going to do at Florida. Look at what Kyle Trask did. Look at our history with Tim Tebow and Dak Prescott. And you sell that. You don't have to get as creative. And I think maybe they're still in that Mississippi State mindset where you can be a little more lackadaisical, and there's certainly not going to be as much criticism if you're the 27th ranked class, you know, at Mississippi State. If you're the 27th ranked class at Florida, you're doing something wrong or not doing anything at all.
I mean, you know, I had plenty of Mississippi State media on when Dan Mullen was hired, and they laid this out. Basically, what we're talking about.
We didn't want to hear it at the time. We're like, no, you're wrong.
Yeah. The logo was going to be different. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to compare it like that. It's just if you kind of compare the apples and the oranges of Florida and Mississippi State, it's a bit, you know, knowing the expectations from each place, the complaints are the same.
Yeah.
So that's where it's kind of coming from there. And look, and I still kind of go back to the question, should there be this many questions after year three? I don't think we thought we were going to be asking these questions after the 2020 season going into 2021 when Dan Mullen was hired.
I don't think we thought we'd be asking these questions in November.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I keep going back to that late season slide. You're right. And that
November, Florida beats Georgia, wasn't even close. And you're thinking, bring on Bama. Bring it. And we were guilty of it.
Oh, yeah.
Fans are like, we play Tennessee this week. We're like, well, I've been thinking about Bama for a month now. So I didn't have to play any snaps so we could sit there and talk about it. But, and whether it's fair or unfair, listen, you're going to be compared to Nick Saban. That's the big dog right now. That's the big man on campus. So can you recruit like him? Not many guys have been able to. Dabo, Lincoln Riley to an extent, Kirby until he kicks his next five-star quarterback off campus and they go somewhere else. You're not going to, but you need to at least be competitive. And I think that's probably where I think there's a gap. I mean, Nick Saban's 70 years old and just signed his best recruiting class ever. So, I mean, he's doing something.
Yeah. So, you know, with the end of the 2020 season and recruiting, there's still a lot of questions, Nick. And with that ending to the season, that did change the outlook for many fans out there. I've talked to many fans out there, seen message boards, you guys' message boards there at Rivals, Gators Territory. You know, I think that late season slide in recruiting has definitely, I think, made some fans tap the brakes a little bit. You know, you had the ending of the season, the press conferences, all the NFL talk, the replacement for coaching hires. You know, it started raising a lot of questions from the fan base, and not sure we thought in 2018 there'd be this many questions. And Nick, we'll get into, I'll get your quick thoughts on the coaching changes 2021 a bit as well. You know, Georgia, overwhelming favorite to win the East. I'm not sure, you know, should that be the case after year three? You know, of course, games have to be played, but doesn't perception play a role here too? And I know going back to when Mullen was hired, I didn't think we'd be going into year four thinking Georgia would be an overwhelming favorite going into any season past Mullen's second season. You know, basically, the only way that changes is if Mullen goes out there and beats Georgia again. You know, the 2021 schedule, looking at, you know, Alabama's on the schedule. And Nick, I think this is a pretty good way. Maybe I'm looking at it the wrong way. 2020, that's the season. And going to Atlanta and playing Alabama, I think it showed you how close those teams were, the 2020 Alabama team and the 2020 Florida team. I don't think it showed you how close the programs are. I think 2021 could show that. Hold on. Don't get me wrong. Even if you beat Alabama, you're not on that level of program. But I do think it's a feather in your cap. You know, of course, the rest of the season will have to play out. But you beat Alabama the first SEC game of the season. You go, and it's like, okay, maybe the gap is shrinking a bit, maybe not the traditional way. But you go out there early in the season, you beat that Alabama team. No, you're not on their level program-wise, but you played them close in 2020. If you somehow go beat them in 2021, I think that's a feather in the cap there that shows, all right, things are still on the right track in some form and fashion.
Yeah, that'd be a feather in Peter Pan's cap. And I'd love to follow you to Never Never Land where Florida's beating Alabama in the third week of the season next year because I don't see it.
I didn't say it was going to happen.
Yeah, grow up, Peter Pan. I don't see it. I don't see this. This was the year. I guess you would rather glass half full. You'd rather play Alabama working with a new quarterback and some new pieces early on in the year than later. But you're in the same boat. You're working with a new quarterback, two new starting offensive linemen. Is Rick Wells a starting receiver? Until Eric Gilbert came, I was going through Florida's depth chart, and I'm like, I don't feel good about tight end. I don't feel good about receiver unless Xavier Henderson really takes a jump from his freshman to his sophomore year. I just look at Florida's roster, and it's like I said before, I just have so many question marks. There's talent. I think Xavier Henderson can be great. If Jacob Copeland stops dropping passes, I think he can be an all-SEC wide receiver. There's pieces there, but then it's like, what is Shelton? What are these, you know, defensive tackle transfers? Who's starting at safety? I just think Florida has too many questions and has not recruited portal or high school wise to be able to compete with Alabama. Like you said, the 2020 team, credit to Dan, Billy, John, Brian, the game plan they had to play that Alabama team that week was fantastic. I think they'll have another game plan for Alabama. I just don't think the talent is there.
Yep. I mean, like I said, I wouldn't pick it. But if it happens somehow, some way, then
hey, bring me on after Florida beats Alabama and I'll eat all the crow.
Oh, put it this way, I ain't gonna pick it now, and I ain't gonna pick it the week of the game. Yeah. This is just a hypothetical what if. Then I think you can start. I'll look in the mirror really hard and think about how it's being done. And then, you know, I think all of this, Nick, the good and the bad, you know, raises the big question of all: what is the next step, and when is the next step? You know, for many, the progress from the previous coaching staffs and beating Georgia in year three and winning the SEC East have them satisfied so far. And then if that's the case for you, the question can be, you know, for me, when is it okay to move on from that? When is it okay to be wanting more than, oh, it's better than Will Muschamp. It's better than Jim McElwain. Eventually, you got to take that next step. Eventually, that's not going to be enough. And a lot of times in coaches' tenure, you kind of know year three, year four, that, you know, you're on the right path. You're on a path for championships. I think it's still an unknown right now for Dan Mullen. For some fans, 2020 was supposed to be that next step. Just beating Georgia, going to Atlanta wasn't enough. When you go and look at the window of opportunity that was there, an historically great offense, but it was paired with an equally as bad defense in a year like no other due to COVID. With the way Florida recruits compared to Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, the window was still there with the way everything lined up on offense, the experience on staff and on the field that would help in a tough year like COVID, where practice and preparation was limited. You had an experienced staff. You had a lot of experienced players. It was time to take advantage, much like LSU did in 2019. But that window was shut late in the season. Once again, it was the teams with the most talent fighting it out in the college football playoff. And with that comes a lot of questions. Everything that happened, everything we just discussed, Nick, comes with a lot of questions. So, you know, the state of program in my eyes is it's been really fun these first 3 years under Dan Mullen, but still so many questions on the ceiling of the program that I didn't think I'd have after the third season when he was hired.
I've been negative, but my first season was covering 2013. It has been way more fun the last 3 years with Dan Mullen with the offense. I mean, even the defense. I go back to, we were talking signature wins earlier. His probably first big win was winning in Starkville the first year after he left. I mean, Donovan Steiner's, you know, water boy sack at the end of the game. That was fun. It's been fun. And I would not trade, you know, this year and go back to like the McElwain or Muschamp years. I think the program's heading in the right direction. I think the ceiling of the program, I think you can be that Alabama. You can be a Clemson. You can reach that. But like you said, I think the stars are kind of aligned, and COVID definitely changed things. Like, you could see it across the board. Florida's defense got a little bit better, but then tailed off towards the end of the season. But you saw everyone in the beginning. Alabama gave up almost 700 yards to Ole Miss. The beginning of the season, not being able to have a true camp, not being able to tackle and do stuff like that, it took defenses a beat. I think the program can reach to an Alabama, a Clemson, and can fight with those guys on a year-in, year-out basis. I just think into this year, I'm looking at LSU like last year, the 2019 team, everything they did, and then you lose everyone. I'm looking at 15 seniors here, adding Kyle Trask, Kyle Pitts, and you're losing a ton. So I think the stars aligned last year, and then you look at Florida's schedule this year, you draw LSU and Alabama from the West. You have the hardest schedule in the SEC with more question marks than you had last year. So that's probably where my pessimism is coming in if we're talking about the future. Not the future long term. I'm just thinking about next year because I think it's more of a reloading year for Florida with a more difficult schedule than they had this previous season.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of people are kind of leaning towards what I've kind of seen. 2021, build it for 2022.
That,
don't throw away the season. You never know what happens. You go out there, you play the games. Weird things happen. You go out there. That's why you go play the game. You know, for 2021, as Nick said, everything you lose, all the changes, coaching staff and stuff as well. 2021 will be just that really, really unknown season. You go and look at the early rankings. You look at Florida in that 15th range, and you got Alabama. You got the usual suspects up top. I just think when Dan Mullen was hired, I expected, you know, starting every season, basically like you did maybe the last two in that 5, 6, 7, 8 range. But, you know, ESPN, as we said, kind of going back to the beginning of this episode, has Florida in that tier right behind the usual suspects. So, you know, things are headed in the right direction in some fashion, and just a little bit different than I think some of those traditional ways of doing so. Nick, before I let you go, man, you hit on the schedule a bit. I was going to get into that a bit more, but no, we really need to. The hires. What do you think about the new hires and how that kind of plays into? I know fan base wasn't really happy with the hires. I'm not going to lie and say that. The first two, the secondary hires, I didn't really mind so much. I think some unknown there as far as Montanar comes and in the recruiting coordinator. He's got a pretty good history there for a young for a young coach, so kind of making his way through the ranks. I think, you know, I like that. But the McGee hire replacing Brian Johnson was made quickly. And I think that's the one that has everybody wondering just a bit. But
here's my little thing of that.
More on the recruiting front, more so because it's Dan Mullen's offense, play caller, quarterback coach, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so it was first off, right off the bat, I think Jules is doing a great job just being active on Twitter. Almost like, I don't know what Tim Brewster means when he tweets, but he tweets a lot, and I think it gets the people going a little bit. And I see Jules doing kind of the same thing. He's tweeting out, you know, the Jordan shoes that are exclusive to Florida and using those little advantages you have, just putting it out there, putting himself out there, interacting with people on social media. To me, devil's advocate, is the new quarterback's coach a sexy hire that's going to get you up in the morning and have you feeling good? No, but I don't think it was just a lazy thing. You had him come in last year as an analyst. He's been around the program. Once you moved Brian Johnson to offensive coordinator, that was Dan saying to Brian, this is how you're going to progress in your career. The quarterback's coach at the University of Florida is not going to get a head coaching job. The offensive coordinator at the University of Florida that has an offense like that with Kyle Trask is going to get other opportunities. He was giving Brian an opportunity because I think he's a future superstar head coach, giving him the opportunity, knowing that, hey, you hope it's not after 1 year, you hope maybe two, but you bring someone in place who has head coaching experience, who has experience coaching receivers, experience developing quarterbacks, and he's sitting there and he's an analyst. So he's in the program. He knows what the program does, the expectations, how practices run. Brian Johnson, not his fault, but didn't do Dan any favors with the timing of him leaving. Yeah. At the time that he left, you've already had coaches hired and fired and moved around. So this was, to me, it looks lazy, but to me it's, okay, we have a guy who at least is familiar with everyone, familiar with our roster, knows Emery, knows Anthony, has relationships with them. It's not a sexy hire. At the end of the day, the buck stops on Dan Mullen's desk. It was a collaboration with play calling with him and Brian last year. He doesn't need that, though. Dan Mullen's going to call plays. So I think it wasn't as lazy as I initially thought. Once I look into it a little bit more, I'm like, okay, well, maybe there was this plan in place. And if Brian did leave earlier than we thought, we've got somebody here that we're comfortable with taking over for the quarterbacks.
Yeah, I like what you said about the timing. It did happen a little bit late in the process and the cycle. I'm sure there was interest.
He was a finalist at Boise, so you knew it was coming. You just thought once he didn't get hired at Boise, I'm like, okay, you got Brian for at least one more year. But his time, I think as soon as he was made offensive coordinator, I was like, time's ticking. He's not going to be at Florida very long. He's going to get another opportunity.
It's still open. I still think, I know he just took that Philadelphia job. If I'm UCF, I still make a call.
I still make that call. They hired an AD today, right?
Right. From Arkansas State. I forget his name, but yeah, they just hired their AD. So I'm telling, I know he just.
That'd be a quick move.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe he hasn't moved everything out of Gainesville yet. So just a short drive down there to Orlando.
Shout out to Danny White. He finally got that home and home of Florida.
Oh, man, I tell you, there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation. Probably say the same. Probably say the same for up there in Knoxville too.
I don't envy it right now. Talking to my buddy Trey Wallace up there with everything going on with them, I'm like, man, I do not envy your job right now, buddy. I'm happy here.
All right, Nick, man. Yeah, thanks for hopping on. What you guys got going on at Gators territory?
We got football breakdowns. I'm starting to break down the team and the depth chart, seeing what Florida has at every position. I'm really excited about the running backs. I mean, the room is deep.
Man, we did our offensive preview a couple weeks ago, and I'm telling you, you hope Bowman's the guy anyway.
Yeah.
You know, just speaking for – I think it speaks to recruits a bit. You got a five-star out there putting up stats, but – I mean, you got a litany of guys who are all back from last year.
And then we got baseball starting. Unanimous number one Florida Gators. We start next week, man. This time's flying by. So 56 games there, and basketball whenever they get back on the court.
Yeah, all football all the time here, Nick. But what'd you see from the baseball scrimmages?
They're really good. They're really good. They've got enough pitching, I think, to have like a 100-game season. They've got guys coming out of the bullpen that could start for Georgia or start for Alabama. They're going to be a really, really good team.
Guys, if you won't get your baseball coverage, there's no better follow than Nick out there at Gators Territory and on Twitter as well at De La Torre. But yeah, you're not going to get baseball coverage anywhere else than how Nick covers it.
You're not doing it, Dave?
No.
Drive on down. You sit next to me in the press box, and we'll watch some ball. We'll watch a four-and-a-half-hour, 12-inning Tuesday night game.
Everybody says, it is funny about baseball. I kind of thought that. To me, everybody's like, oh, it's too slow of a game. That's why, you know, the younger crowd can't get into it. To me, it should be the perfect game for younger people. You can stay on your phone 90% of the game.
Well, that's how you catch a foul ball to the face, Dave.
That is true. I know. But TV wise, you can stay on your phone and not miss anything. It should be the game that actually caters to people staying on their cell phones.
Yeah, I've been to the new park a bunch. It's gonna be hard to get tickets. They're only doing about 20-25% of seven. They have 7,000 seats, but they can get 10,000. So it's gonna be anywhere between 1,400 to 2,200 per game. But if you get a chance to get a ticket and go see a game, that is a beautiful stadium. You don't even need – you can get a general admission ticket and sit in the berm in the outfield. It's a really, really beautiful park, and it's going to be a fun team to watch, and it's a beautiful place to watch a game.
Nick, the schedule's pretty much staying the same, right? SEC games on weekends. Well, I guess once conference play starts, but SEC games weekend, but still midweek games as well, right?
Yep. Midweek games, and next Friday, Miami comes to town. So that's no better way to open a brand new park than with a Florida and Miami series.
There we go. So once again, more baseball coverage. Go to Gators Territory. Follow Nick there. Go to Gators Territory. We'll get Corey Bender on sometime soon as well to talk 2022 recruiting, how all that's going to look early on in the process. So Corey will be on soon. But Nick, man, thanks for hopping on again, man.
Appreciate it, Dave, always.
All right, that's Nick at Gators Territory. I'm your host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.